Welcome to the noon hour of Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050, streaming online tsn.ca on the iHeartRadio app. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Leafs Lunch 1050. Andy Petrillo alongside Gord Miller, Greg Gilbert.
Stanley Cup winner times two.
Well, he's got the two rings. It's times three, right?
Times three, sorry.
Yes.
God,
three's a charm,
baby.
Well, no,
that's right. I forgot.
Got the two rings with him today. Frank Cervelli still sleeping. That's right. I'm making assumptions that he partied too hard at the U2 concert. So now he's passed out in his bed like a rock star.
No, he's not.
He's working.
You totally made that up. Like, you completely made that up.
Yes, yes, I did. Anyone who takes me seriously.
That's been my mistake all along.
I realize my mistake all along. Frankie. Frankie is from Philly. So we have, because, you know, my husband's from Philly. So we have this bond, right? So it's okay. I can make fun of him. It's fine. He'll do the exact same thing to me. I'm waiting for it. He'll get me back. Don't you worry. Frank will get me back. Darren Dreger is going to be joining us in about 20 minutes' time. We'll get a little bit more into the Calgary situation here. Because, yeah, I call it a situation because he did follow up on it. But that doesn't mean we can't talk about it. Tonight, though, big game. Pittsburgh Penguins, Nashville Predators. That series tied 2-2. Mike Sullivan confirming that it will be Matt Murray in net. Nick Bonino, a game-time decision. We know in Game 4, he took the warm-up. He's been wearing the boot. But he did take the warm-up, just wasn't good to go. Patrick Hornquist was not on the ice yesterday either. I mean, tis the season, right? I mean, we just know all these players are pretty banged up. Right. Other than PK Subban, who blocked a shot near the end of Game 4 and didn't skate yesterday, though, he's okay. And we know, obviously, they don't have Ryan Johansson. But it looks like the Nashville Predators, though. At least it looks, because you never know what injuries any players are dealing with. They just look to be the healthier team at the moment. But let's just see if they can get over their demons from Games 1 and 2 of how that went in Pittsburgh. I've asked this before about momentum and who you favor in the series. And I know it's a tough word, but going in, everyone, there seemed to be the majority that thought it was the Pittsburgh Penguins Cup to lose. Do you still have that feeling?
Greg, you won six Stanley Cups. What do you think?
You think I make things
up. I just lost the other four rings. Yeah, it's. I don't think it's the Penguins' cup to lose. I think Nashville is one of those teams that just everything is falling into place and has fallen into place the last little while. Could they be the team of destiny? I think it's quite possible. And those last two games in Nashville, I think tonight is really going to show, obviously, which way the series is going to go. But up to this point, you know, Pittsburgh's played okay and played better on the road than they did at home, as Gord was talking about earlier. But Nashville just seems to be one of those teams that, you know, they run up against the wall one night and boom, they're dressed up and they're ready to go against the wall, up to the wall the next night. So are things in their corner? I look at Nashville having the momentum right now going into Pittsburgh. But there's going to be, tonight's going to be a telltale sign on what's going to happen.
Is there momentum, though, within a playoff series?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can build a momentum, and Nashville's probably looking at, okay, Bonino's out, he's injured, Hornquist might be out too. Right. So that's part of momentum building. When you can see the other team wearing down and breaking down, that's momentum. It's not just, you know, you're up-tempo in the game and playing in the offensive zone all the time and what have you. Momentum is seeing the other team.
You can smell blood in the water.
You can smell blood, and you can see you're starting to break their will. And when you see that, that is momentum. And then that's when good teams, they drive the nail in the coffin and it's over.
Does momentum, though, last, like, say, the first 10 minutes of the game? Like, if you don't capitalize on that?
No.
No?
No. It's a long-term thing. There's no question. Now, it can change over the course of the 60 minutes or 80 minutes, whatever it takes in that game. Momentum can swing, but not that quickly.
Well, I wonder, and I'm sure if you're a Pittsburgh Penguins fan, you're like, whatever, we're just going to continue doing what we're doing. We've been there, done that. When it comes to going to the game, being part of the fan experience, and in fact, we're actually going to have at 12:45, around that time, we're going to have Michelle Miller, known as the Penguins Knitting Lady, join us. Had to get on the show. She sits there and she knits. You may know her when you watch the games. She's always behind the bench and you see her knitting all the time. She got chirped on Twitter because she was told, how can you be knitting at a Stanley Cup playoff game? And she's like, I was knitting Game 7, 2009. Thank you very much. So we're going to have her on. But do you feel like what fan base would you rather be a part of? The crazy party of the Nashville Predators? Or, I mean, Pittsburgh Penguins, who, you know, still have, they're pretty crazy. I mean, you're in the Stanley Cup final for crying out loud, but it's not the party atmosphere. It's still like, let's sit and focus on the game. What atmosphere would you rather be a part of?
Nashville.
Yep.
I agree. Absolutely.
Now that said, maybe because it's so new there. Right? I mean,
it's a novelty. It's
their first time in the Stanley Cup final. There's that excitement. I mean, yeah, Pittsburgh's kind of been there, done that, right? They've
ho-hum.
Not ho-hum, but it's just not the same.
See, you know, here's we all know everything gets brought up a notch because it is the Stanley Cup final. But one argument, and I know the one that I've been making, and you know, I know you've covered a lot of games there as well. So of course it's not at this level, but in Nashville, they do have these chants throughout the season as well. They do some, you know, crazy stuff. We all know about the Fang Fingers, and obviously they have the bands playing anyway during intermission. Like, that's something they do anyway. It just gets kicked up a notch because it's the Stanley Cup final. So, like, I'm also talking about in the regular season, would you like to be a part of that kind of atmosphere all the time anyway?
Yeah, I think Nashville's one of the great, you know, regular season venues in the league. Montreal is really good. It's not the same, though. Like Greg, you played in Chicago and New York, which were two of the best. You know, Madison Square Garden and the Chicago Stadium were two of the best venues in the league. They've been changed by larger, you know, MSG's been renovated.
Right.
New building in Chicago. Prices are way higher. It's not the same. You know, like the Madison Square Garden used to be a blue-collar, you know, hardcore Ranger crowd. Now it's more corporate.
Right.
The ticket prices have tripled. It's just not the same. And Chicago's not the same as it was. It's loud, but it's not the stadium.
Right.
It's just not, it's not the same. Nashville still has that aura to it because most of the people that go to those games buy the tickets themselves.
Okay, did you see the one person? We don't know who it is, but they saw on StubHub that for four tickets, they spent just over $31,000.
On the glass, where you can't see.
Can't see anything.
$31,800 and something, I think, for four tickets.
Yeah.
Must be nice. Must be nice to be rich. I want to be rich. Tell me what it's like to be rich.
I don't know.
Liar.
I don't know. Ask the government. They have all my money.
They're hard to get a hold of.
I mean, that's what. But if you bring up a good point. I mean, when you ticket, and we've, I mean, this is also a topic that we can discuss even throughout the regular season. When your ticket prices are a certain way or a certain price, you attract a certain crowd that can, you know, have that kind of disposable income, and maybe they're not the ones that would necessarily be taking their shirts off or waving the towels up in the air. And
But you know what? Like where we sit in the stands in Nashville. Where you broadcast the game from, you're actually in the stands. There's fans right in front of you.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I probably do, this year I probably did 8 or 9 games in Nashville between NBC and TSN. The same people sit in front of you all the time.
Yeah.
Like, they say hi.
That's great.
Yeah.
You see the same people. Now, my father-in-law has two sets of Leaf season tickets. No one buys them all. We sell them, we parcel them off to people. No one goes to every game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know many people in Toronto who go to every Leaf game.
I mean, it's tough. That's 41 games.
It's expensive. But I think in Nashville, I get the sense that there are a lot of people that probably go to 35-plus games a year. That's their social outing. It's a they know all the people in their row. It's a, you know, they go together before the game. They get together before the game. They get together after the game. It's a social outing. It used to be that way in Edmonton, you know, in the 80s, because the ticket prices weren't that high. It was something you could do 41 times a year.
Well, now it's a way to also profit, right? I had a friend who had season tickets, maybe kept 10 for herself, 10, 50, and then you just sell out the rest and you sell them at a bit of a profit and you actually make the money back or some, you recoup back from what you spent.
Scalping.
But
saying, it's illegal.
But a lot of people
actually,
do that.
Not.
No, you can also resell it back on Ticketmaster or whatever.
You can sell it for higher than the price you paid.
I think you can put them on Kijiji, can't you?
Yeah, you can put them. Oh, you
really?
Can.
Sure.
Oh, they'll do it. I know.
Anything goes nowadays.
But I do think that the difference is that, you know, for a pair of tickets to a Leaf game, on average, is about $450.
Man, oh man!
Right? So, I mean, their average ticket price is probably north of $125. So say it's $250.
No, it's true. It's expensive.
So how many people spend $250 on nights out 41 times a year before you've parked, eaten, had a beer, done any of that? I mean, it's a very expensive proposition. Whereas in Nashville, you can buy in a regular season. You can buy a ticket for $25.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's true. When you get to know the people around you, and again, I know I always compare it to the Toronto FC crowd because I go to those games quite a bit, but we have our season tickets and it's the same people around you. And here's the thing. If you're somebody who wants a party and you're somebody who doesn't want the party, you want to sit and focus on the game, you can have the best of both worlds. Because again, at Toronto FC, there's no what's known as the supporter section. You just know there is a certain part of the stadium that is where the nutsos are. God bless them, but they're crazy. And if you want that experience, you have the ability to sit near there if you want to get tickets close to there. Or if you're the type of person, which I know a lot of times I am, I just want to sit and watch. Like even when I bring friends or family to the game, I do not want them talking to me. I'm focusing on the game. Sometimes I'm in that kind of mood.
Right.
You can do that too because you just know where to buy your tickets. So I wonder if in hockey, it would be nice to create, you can have your supporters section and then you just have the other sections.
Well, Greg, you coach in junior.
Yes.
Junior hockey is much more that community.
Absolutely.
You get people that go to every game.
Yeah.
And they sit together and it's a community. It's your social outing.
Yeah, and it's almost like those types of fans take ownership in the team because because they're there all the time. They follow it inside and out on social media, regular media. Yeah. They go to the games. They see everything. How many of them actually travel on the road to see the team play away? I mean, it's they take ownership in the team. They become part of the team. And I was talking with somebody. We were talking about how this part of the game has advanced. I mean, you go buy a ticket in Nashville, say, and it's not just, okay, we're going to watch hockey. It's an experience. It starts 3 hours before and ends 3 hours after. Like, it is a whole day experience for that type of thing. But there's some areas, obviously, there's some rinks you can't do those things.
In Toronto, I would venture to say that more than half the people at a Leaf game on any given night did not pay with their own money for their ticket.
They got it from
their company.
It was company
tickets, friends tickets, whatever. But most people didn't pay. The majority of people at a Leaf game most nights didn't pay their own money to get in.
Wow,
that's a different. Look who owns the tickets.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely
look who owns the tickets. Your law firm has tickets, or the brokerage has tickets. I mean, your company might have paid for them, but you personally didn't pay for them.
How many rinks now actually hold tickets for walk-ups? I don't think anybody does anymore.
Pittsburgh has what they call the student rush.
Do they?
So they've held 750 tickets. It used to be 750. And on game day at 4 o'clock, they open the box office. And if you have a student ID card, like college or whatever, you can... And sometimes the players will bring pizza to the people in the line because they want that. And I think that's something that you always want people, even if it's just one or two games a year, you don't ever want to have a generation of fans that doesn't go to games.
Mm-hmm.
And Edmonton made that mistake, and Calgary did too, in the 80s, where they sold way too many season tickets, and a lot of people grew up not going to the games.
Yeah.
They didn't have that experience.
No, and that's why it's a business, but you also don't want to outprice that market where the young kids go to a game. Like when I used to work at Leafs TV, we would do our pre- and post-game shows from ACC, and I can't tell you, our shows are there, so all the people want to gather around. I can't tell you how many parents would come up to me, whether it be a mom or a dad, and they'd say, yeah, I'm here with my son, daughter, but I have, two other kids at home, but this is how we save up our money, where we can only go one at a time. We can never really come as a family.
Yeah.
Because they can't spend that money all at once. So it's like, it takes a while. And I just feel like that can ruin the experience. But the point I was also trying to make about the whole party atmosphere is what I don't like and what I dispute is that if you think a fan or fans are going to a game and they're screaming their head off and they're singing and they're chanting, it's not like they don't know the game. There seems to be this misconception that if you're not sitting in your seat and focusing on the game, then
and
you don't
coaching along.
Yeah, that you don't appreciate it and you don't know it.
Right.
Right. Again, I'll draw the comparison with TFC. Those fans who just won't stop singing and chanting, which they themselves are highly entertaining. Sometimes I watch them more than I watch the game. You can still talk to those fans after the game and they will tell you every single thing that happened in the game. Yeah. They can still dissect the game. They know what went on. So I just don't like that. It's just a misconception to think that if you're a rowdy fan, if you're going crazy, if you're cheering, if you're doing whatever, that's because you don't appreciate the game. To me, that's a purist way to look at it. Ah, if you're not sitting there, quiet, watching, dissecting, analyzing, then you don't know the game. No, that's not true. I don't like that idea.
Yeah, and I think the investment of the fan, both literally and figuratively, is important. That people that pay for the tickets themselves are more invested in the game.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. Doesn't matter whether you're quiet or you're rowdy and loud.
So say you pay $200, and my father-in-law's tickets are in the gold, in the corner goals. They're 200 and I mean, there's graded pricing, but they're $265 each. Okay, so that's corner gold row 16. If you paid $525 for a pair of tickets, guaranteed you're there for the opening faceoff, guaranteed you're there for the start of each period.
I'm there for warm-up.
And guaranteed you're there to the end of the game.
Absolutely.
Now, if your boss says, here's a pair of tickets to the game tonight, you might or might not get there on time. You might or might not be there for the start of the period. Even if you're a fan, it's just not the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
And it's just a different, you know, it's just a different vibe to it.
Yeah.
It's not bad or wrong, but when people pay their own money for the, in Ottawa, most of the people paid their own money for the ticket.
Yeah.
Well, let's keep talking about money. Darren Dreger is going to be joining us in about 5 minutes' time. The Calgary Flames and the threat of moving.
Now, easy now. He didn't threaten.
Really?
Brian Burke did not say the Calgary Flames were moving. He did not say.
I love Berkey. We all know this. I have put it out there that I am a huge fan. But we can't. I mean, he basically said, we're not going to threaten to move. We'll just move. Obviously, the whole context was the whole new arena. And somebody had asked him about, well, where do you think the Flames are going? And then he made that comment, which then prompted Ken King to issue his words of like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Brian Burke doesn't speak for all of us when it comes to that. We are still negotiating and we really hope we can make things work in Calgary. But of course, it just creates this whole hoopla because that's what Brian Burke does best. Darren Dreger followed up on everything there. What is going on? Mayor Nenshi of Calgary gave his 2 cents, said this is not negotiating tactics. Last I checked, we're supposed to be negotiating. What a mess. We'll discuss that with Darren Dreger, a TSN Hockey Insider, when we return here on Leafs Lunch, TSN 1050 and TSN.ca. Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050. Andy Petrillo alongside Gord Miller and three-time Stanley Cup champ Greg Gilbert. Teams already coming out with their preseason schedules. I can't even look at them. I can't even of preseason. If you're a player right now, especially if you are Pittsburgh and you're Nashville, you're like, I don't even want to think about that at the moment.
Hey, I was talking to Mike Keenan, your old coach at the World Hockey Championship. KHL training camps open in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Ugh.
End of July or middle of July.
Yeah. Oh, no. End of June.
No, Mike. Really? End of June?
End of June or July.
Well, I thought Mike was going over 1st of July to China.
And then they're going. Yeah. So 3 weeks. Sorry, three weeks.
So he leaves to go there and then. Yeah. Oh, jeez.
But preseason games now are so much more important than they used to be.
Well, the training camps are so short.
Right. And for players trying to earn jobs, it's such a small window.
Mm-hmm.
We used to dread training camps, especially with Mike. They were 3 weeks long, and you knew it was 45 minutes in the morning, high tempo. There's only three lines, two sets of D, and one goalie. And then in the afternoon, you came back and played a 60-minute scrimmage every day for a week. By the end of the week, you're like, okay, what's the break?
Remember the good old days when guys would drive around in either a scuba suit or a green garbage bag with the windows rolled up and the heat on in August to try to drop those 15 pounds to make weight for camp. Things have changed somewhat since then.
And I know preseason is important, but I mean, a lot of people argue the games, still too many. Like, I'm just looking at Chicago's list here, 6 games. Like, I just feel like maybe even 6 games is 6 too many. I don't know. Let's see what Darren Dreger thinks here at TSN Hockey Insiders. Hockey Insider brought to you by Finance It. How are you feeling that the preseason schedule is already coming out, Dregs?
Oh, yeah, I can't wait. I'm really excited by it. One thing we don't do is enough NHL games over the course of the season. And you throw in the World Juniors, you throw in the World Championship, and you throw in 7-game series in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I mean, we're living a dream.
Oh, man. Do you still think there are too many preseason games? There's still that argument. Like, should they go down? I mean, I think the Leafs are one of the teams that also play the most. But, I mean, should they be chopped in half?
Well, I would say yes, but I'd concede to Mr. Gilbert, you know, from a professional standpoint. How many teams don't have their roster pretty much picked by the time camp opens? I mean, maybe there's a rare occasion where a player who surprises you, you know, earns an extended look going into the early part of the regular season, and then ultimately you hope that it turns into a full-time roster spot. But at least my belief is that the majority of NHL clubs are pretty much locked and loaded by the time the training camp opens, or certainly the exhibition season.
Greg, I'm going to disagree with you.
That'd be a first.
What else is new?
I'm going to disagree. When you look at the number of players on PTOs now, professional tryouts, that are going to camp without a contract, and there's more and more of them every year, those exhibition, those preseason games are the only chance they have to earn a job. I still think there are 2 to 3 spots on every team that are open during training camp. I do think, and the number of guys on PTOs is going up every year because they don't get contracts. Greg Gilbert.
What are you going to say?
Okay, I got to disagree with you.
Oh,
I love this show right now.
Okay, what usually happens nowadays is every team in the National Hockey League, they'll have a pre-camp of rookies and free agents that come in. They'll go play the pre-camp tournaments as that group, and they'll pick their number 5 or 6 guys they're going to take out of that team to the main camp. Guys are going to camp. I mean, their numbers are small now. They're looking low 30s, mid-30s at most for their main camps. And the PTO guys, if by chance they look good in that pre-camp tournament, and they get an opportunity, they're still there. No, but what most teams now are doing is all these kids that are, majority of the kids that are going to these pre-camp tournaments are guys' previous drafts from that team. There are a few PTOs or free agent guys that go, but there's very few that come out of that thing into actually the main camp for the big team, because there's just no time anymore.
But Dregs, remember Montreal 2 years ago when Mike Condon beat out Dustin Tokarski for the backup job.
Right.
In the preseason.
Right.
Well, I'm not saying there's none. I'm just saying it's very limited.
I agree with that. I mean, and you look at what Christopher Stieg did last year. I mean, he goes over Switzerland, and doesn't pan out. They're terrified of past injuries. He comes back, signs on a, I guess it was a PTO, an agreement with the Edmonton Oilers, and then, gets enough interest from the Calgary Flames that he ends up playing there and may secure an additional contract. I mean, there's always room for that type of player. I get it. I think that it, even though the PTO numbers may be increasing, how many of those guys actually make a roster? You know, they sign 2 ways, and the majority of them end up playing if they choose in the American League or other or elsewhere.
Darren, speaking of Calgary, what do you make of the whole Brian Burke thing yesterday when he said...
Well, we can actually air his clip.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, so before we get into it, this is what's causing the stir. So this was Brian Burke, who, he's the president of hockey operations for the Calgary Flames, was speaking at a business luncheon at the Canadian Club of Calgary yesterday. And, of course, it got into the new arena, and do they get a new arena? And, yes, you need public funding, and why can't they just get it done privately? And this was something that Brian Burke said.
What Ken King said was, we're not going to make a threat to move. We're just going to move if we don't get the deal we need. And you're saying that's fine.
No, I'm not saying that it's fine.
Well, you just said Murray Edwards should pay for the building himself. The math works fine. They figured it out in Edmonton, but we're smarter here. They figured out public money is useful toward rejuvenating downtown and making a statement and keeping jobs. But we're smarter than that here. They figured it out in Manitoba, but we're smarter in Alberta. No, it's not just my view on this. Taxpayers all over Canada have figured this out. Municipalities all over Canada have figured this out. Most intelligent people get this. Sorry with my learned friend. I think most people get this.
Okay, so then Ken King came out and said, Brian Burke runs hockey operations for the Calgary Flames, and he and many Calgarians have strong views about this topic. However, he is not our spokesperson regarding a new event center for our city. We remain committed to our dialogue with the city and very optimistic we will get to a positive conclusion. We admire everyone's enthusiasm on this subject. So question number one, do you know Brian Burke, Ken King, are they okay?
Well, yeah, they're okay. I mean, it clearly sounds like Ken King came up over off the top rung and trumped Brian Burke. But knowing how that relationship works, sometimes it's volatile and sometimes they work nicely together. I would say that Brian Burke would have been given the heads up on that statement going out before it went out. But there is a backstory to this, which I learned earlier this morning. And Gord, you know this because you've done a number of speaking engagements with Berkey. He went into that conference, whatever it was, expecting that it was a group of business leaders and whatnot from around the city of Calgary. What he didn't expect was the number of cameras. He had asked prior to going in, at least this is my understanding, whether or not there would be media there. and there wasn't supposed to be media there, so he can see the cameras. So, you know, clearly he has to be a bit more in check with his emotion. But some believe that the person badgering Brian Burke and asking these difficult questions may have been a plant, either from a media perspective to get him to sound off on a real hot topic right now in Calgary, or perhaps somebody from the mayor's office in Calgary to really go after him. So
there's a conspiracy here that guy is a plant?
Well, I mean, some believe that to be true. Now, whether it is or isn't, I don't have time to investigate it, and I don't really care. But that's the belief of some. Because, again, Gord, you know, weigh in on this. You've been to many of these things with Brian. He, at least as far as I know, has never been trapped in the fashion that he was trapped yesterday. So this smells a little bit like a plant.
He was. I would say this. Whether you expect cameras to be there or not, there are people with phones there.
Right.
And the only difference would be if someone tweets out, Brian Burke just said, if we don't get the deal we want, we're not going to threaten to move, we're just going to move.
Right.
What difference is it if that's captured on camera or if someone tweets it out? And then it becomes public that way. I get what you're saying. Whenever you speak in public now, though, you have to recognize that your words are going to... I mean, it's like players that, you know, from Europe that talk to their hometown writers and then are shocked the thing gets translated and comes back to North America at 500 miles an hour, right? I mean, I get what you're saying, and I think he got agitated.
Yeah.
Whether that guy was there on purpose to provoke him or not, he got provoked.
Yeah.
And I think that what Ken King's trying to do, what the mayor's trying to do, is turn the temperature down. Now, the mayor's comment that 99.9999997% of the calls was office are against public funding, that's not true.
That's got a little hyperbole going on there.
So, I mean, I think a deal is going to get done there. The Calgary Flames aren't moving.
No.
You know, when you put Brian Burke out in public, he's going to say stuff.
No, I agree, and I'm not defending him in any way, shape, or form. It just, you know, it sounds like he was on course. Speech went well. You know, he hit the topic specific to the arena that he wanted to hit, and then this guy came at him. So, you know, could be just coincidence, and Berkey being Berkey with all the bluster.
He didn't say anything wrong, though. I mean, he didn't threaten to leave. He didn't say, we're leaving.
Well,
he said, if they don't get a deal, they won't threaten to move.
There was some bravado there. But what I wanted to ask is, I mean, we've seen this before, and I know he used Edmonton as an example, but, you know, if we go back to, I think it was 2012, when Daryl Cates wasn't getting the response he wanted from city council. Remember, he ended up taking that trip to Seattle. He had Wayne Gretzky with him. Oilers fans up in arms. Daryl Cates had to issue this apology. Now, as it turns out, the city is paying, was like more than half.
Right.
Of what's going on in Edmonton. So I guess my question to you is, you know, obviously there's a massive part of me, and I'm sure a lot of people, that when there is this threat of the Calgary Flames are going to move, your first reaction is, no, you're not. Like, where are you going to go? Like, it's still this profitable product. You're not going anywhere. But does it actually work to threaten to maybe play mind games? Because we see what happened in Edmonton.
Yeah, and I think that's Exhibit A of absolutely it works. And that's why, you know, Brian Burke was simply reading off script. And, you know, this is age old. You know, I can remember back in, was it 97, when Houston was sniffing around the
Edmonton Oilers. Les Alexander, you know, was going to buy the Oilers.
Yeah, and obviously the Winnipeg Jets moved when Barry Schenkerow and the city of Winnipeg and the province of Manitoba, you couldn't reach an agreement to, you know, facilitate a new arena and keep the Jets in Winnipeg back in the day. You know, they moved to Phoenix, become the Coyotes, and, you know, then they had to go through a relocation process with Atlanta to get the National Hockey League back there. So it's possible, but I don't believe it for a second. Again, I think that this is all off script. But, you know, just from a personal perspective, anyone who spent 30 seconds in the new building in Edmonton, I mean, there's no question the Calgary Flames have arena envy. You know, I would too. I mean, it might be the best facility in the world, aside from the issues that they have with the ice, which I'm sure they'll straighten out eventually, and the bathrooms, of course. But, I mean, I don't blame Calgary for trying to turn up the heat a little bit.
So what is it going to take? So I think with Daryl Keats, and we were discussing this, Gord, you said he ended up getting, there was a new mayor in town.
Well, the mayor, so a couple things happened. There was an election, and so the city council and the mayor changed.
So as long as Mayor Nenshi is there, do we think anything's going to happen in Calgary?
Well, I think something will happen, but it's got to be a good deal for the taxpayers of Calgary. You know, Darren, yeah. You make the point about the Edmonton building. It's beautiful. The question is it a good deal for the taxpayers of Edmonton?
Right. Right.
Is it worth 450? I think there's north of $450 million of taxpayers' yeah. money in that building. Is that yeah. worth it? Now, I'm not saying yes or no. There is clearly a benefit to having a downtown arena. The concerts, the shows, all the ancillary benefits it brings, there's clearly a benefit. The question is, who's going to reap that benefit?
Right.
And if the taxpayers are going to pay for it, why can't they get a cut of it?
Right. Right. Well, and I mean, you look at what's going on in Edmonton with the Ice District being developed. I mean, OEG is absolutely going to be a funnel, a vacuum for money in the future because of the condos, the fact that they'll own all the restaurants in that area. I mean, everything around that section of real estate in downtown Edmonton basically will be owned and operated by OEG. And yeah, to play devil's advocate, I agree with you, Gord. You know, when you're throwing public money into the mix, shouldn't it then be affordable for all to go to the a game here or there? You know, try and get a ticket in Edmonton. And Calgary isn't a lot better, especially in the second half of the season. I mean, how many people who aren't making six figures in Calgary can afford to spend $150 or more to go watch the Calgary Flames play?
You know, and if you're the mayor of Calgary or any city, maybe you say, yeah, we'll help build you a building. We'll put $400 million in. Yeah. We want 10% ownership of the team.
Right. Yeah. Why not?
With the announcement that was made yesterday with Seattle, so they opted to go with the group, Oakview Group, so OVG, they opted to go with the group that's going to renovate
the Key Center, yeah.
The arena that's already owned by the city or the city's paid into, as opposed to going with the other group where they were going to relocate, build a whole new arena, and apparently it was going to be all private funding. So if they take even public funding now in Seattle, I mean, is this just the trend? Like, is this just the thing now that if you're going to come in, if you're going to have a huge sports complex that's going to house a pro sports team as a city, is this the expectation now, though?
Yeah, I believe it is, but it goes beyond that. And how deep are the pockets of the ownership, you know, backing this type of renovation? And, you know, throw out some of the names. You know, one that jumped off the page for me was Jerry Bruckheimer.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Tim Leiwicki is involved, of course, formerly of the Los Angeles Kings and the Toronto Maple Leafs. But Jerry Bruckheimer has been trying to get involved in NHL ownership, Gord, for how long?
Oh.
Like 15 years or more?
Minimum, yeah.
You know, and this guy's got deep, deep pockets. So, it goes beyond for me the renovation of the Key Arena, and it speaks loudly when I look at Bruckheimer and I see Leiwicki involved and some of the other names associated with it. I mean, these guys have been, you know, they've been doing it, I think, the right way for a long, long time, specific to, you know, relationships with Gary Bettman and the National Hockey League. So with those guys involved, my antenna certainly went up.
Now, here's a difference between Canada and the United States. Brian Burke is 100% right when he says we compete against teams in the U.S. that have their venues built for them almost 100% cost and have favorable leases. That is absolutely yeah. true. Across the board in sports, baseball, football, hockey, basketball, that is true. In Canada,
yeah.
not as true.
100%
funded by the public.
Okay.
Not true. Montreal, yeah. The Bell Center, completely privately built. Ottawa, completely privately built. Toronto, the Air Canada Center, privately built. Vancouver, right. privately built. So, yes, the public money in the Edmonton building, the Calgary building was built for the Olympics in 1988, and yes, there's public money in the building in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
But to top it off, though, Montreal had to pay for lost parking meter revenue, Ottawa had to build their own expressway, and Toronto and Vancouver had to reimburse the city to reinforce the expressways they're built next to. So it's a very different thing to think that Canadians just hand over public money like Glendale did to the Coyotes. That doesn't happen as often here.
Right, and then yeah. look at the fight that Mark Chipman has ultimately won, I believe, in Winnipeg, right?
Right?
Not just with the arena, but again, with the development of the area. Now, there's no way the Winnipeg Jets and True North aren't going to benefit immensely But, you know, he found a way to work, you know, hand in hand with local politics to make them realize that this is going to be good for everything. And as far as I know, it might be a lease or it's just simply the tax. I mean, it's not like the Calgary Flames don't pay into the coffers of you know, the city of Calgary. Somebody told me recently it was upwards of two or better than $2 million per year, which, you know, by NHL standards might be a drop in the bucket, but it's still something.
Dregs, thanks so much for taking the time. How was your daughter's graduation, by the way? Is that tonight?
No, it's today, as a matter of fact. I had to jump on a late flight out of Pittsburgh last night, so we're going through the festivities today, and
nice.
I'll be heading to Nashville later tonight.
Such a proud papa. Well, congratulations on that. We'll talk to you later, Dregs.
Okay, Andy, thank you.
That is our TSN Hockey Insider, Darren Dreger. This Hockey Insider brought to you by Finance It, monthly payment plans for big dreams and everyday budgets. The Penguins knitting lady, also known as Michelle Miller, that's her actual name, is going to be joining us after the break. We see her behind the bench. She knits. What is she knitting? And does she actually give what she knits to the players? What's up with that? We'll discuss when we return here on Leafs Lunch. Don't go anywhere. They'll rescue you from your car lease. Lease Busters, heroic, maybe, helpful, totally. People would love to take over your car lease for your lease relief. Go to leasebusters.com. Andy Petrillo alongside Gord Miller and Greg Gilbert.
17-time Stanley Cup champion.
Keeps increasing after every commercial
unbelievable.
Break.
Your memory's bad.
And I was there for your three cup wins. I should know.
I'm old enough. I'm going to start believing you soon. So
telling everybody, yeah, I won it 17 times.
17 times. I can't name the years, but it was there, I think.
Yeah, Michelle Miller, the Penguins knitting lady, is going to be joining us soon. Are you related?
No.
No.
Don't think so.
If you go on
both
her...
knit, though, right?
If you,
no,
you both
my
knit.
Daughter knits.
I used to know how to knit. Now it's just a disaster. Penn's knitting lady, if you go on her Twitter account. Her Twitter avatar is great. Her just sticking her tongue out at Jaromír Jágr when he was playing for Philly. By the way, did you see that Philly fan in Nashville holding up the sign, just trolling Sidney Crosby? Yes. It's a sea of yellow jerseys.
Yes.
And then there he is in his bright orange jersey holding up a sign. I can't repeat what was on the sign, but let's just say, and we all know how Flyers fans feel about Pens fans and vice versa, but he's holding up a sign trolling Sidney Crosby. So Michelle Miller is going to be joining us momentarily, has that great picture of her just sticking her tongue out at Jágr when he's playing for the Flyers. But she also has these pictures, like, so she knits. And I can't make out, I think it's socks. Like, she has, you know, Mario Lemieux is here, Dan Bylsma when he was a coach, you got Marc-Andre Fleury. So she clearly is then giving what she's knitting to the players.
Nice.
And I want to know how this all started. I want to know how she just, like, how do you get in with your knitting gear? And
they've all got needles, too. Like, she gives the needles away.
Does she give them? Does she give the needles to them? Yeah, they're all holding it.
They're all holding the needles.
This is a talent that I wish I still had.
Maybe it's a team-building thing they do after practice or something.
Isn't that how you deal with stress? Like, now they have, like, those adult coloring books. Knitting can help you deal with stress.
I was never able to stay inside the line, so I never had one of those.
All I know is my little Italian nonna would knit. Let's just say if I wasn't behaving, that knitting needle flew across the room. You had to duck for cover. Okay. Oh, Gord. See, you thought me throwing the poop bag at my husband was bad. You don't know what was thrown at me when I was a kid.
No, that was just a bad move because your husband's 6'5". Like, don't...
I missed.
Don't throw poop bags at people you can't take.
I know. Well, I can run faster than him, though.
No chance. No chance. Like, again, he's 6'5". Like, he covers twice as much ground with a step as you do. That's bad math.
Yeah, but I do the cooking and the cleaning, and I can threaten to ruin his life. He knows. He knows, Gord. Let's bring in Michelle Miller, Penguins knitting lady, here now on Leafs Lunch. Michelle, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
We are great. So we're trying to figure out how this all started, because we see you. When we're watching Pittsburgh Penguins games, there you are, you're knitting away. How did this all happen where you're like, yeah, I'm going to go to a hockey game and I'm going to knit? Is this a way to deal with stress for your team?
Not initially. Initially, it was, oh my God, there are 20 minutes in between each period. I'm so bored.
So you didn't want to wait in the line to grab a beer. You just wanted to sit there and figure out a way to entertain yourself.
Yeah, I don't want to deal with all the crowds. So I just sit there, and if I want something to drink, I get it before the game starts. I don't leave my seat.
Okay.
Once I get there, I watch warm-ups. I'm there until the very end.
So now how did this start where, because we were going through your Twitter page here and we see all the photos of all the players that you've actually managed. Like, are you making them socks?
I'm not making them socks. I'm making myself or my husband socks.
Oh, and then you just kind of hand them to take pictures to show that, hey, I saw them. Yeah. I met them.
There's a knitting humorist called Stephanie Pearl McPhee, and she knits socks all the time. And one of the ways she kind of proves where she's been is she'll take a picture of, like, the bean and hold her sock up to show, hey, there's the bean, and look, this is the sock I'm making. So it proves kind of that it's her photo.
Gotcha.
So I was like, okay, let's take a page from her. Hey, there's a hockey player. Hey, will you hold my sock? And then I take a picture, they hold my sock, and it's proof I've met that player.
Now, hang on, Michelle, because you may knit during the intermissions, but you have been captured on camera knitting during the games now.
Oh, well, initially it was only during intermissions. I would take it out at intermission, put it away during the game. And then, you know, it got to be such a pain in the butt, so I would just leave it in my hands because, you know, you've got commercial timeouts as well and TV timeouts. And those can last a long time, and I got bored there too. So I would leave my project in my hand, and I would, when the play stopped, I'd take up knitting and continue. And then I realized, I noticed that when the play was happening, I was still knitting, even though the play was going on. Because I've been knitting over 20 years, I don't have to look if I have an easy enough project.
So you're, no, the question is, if you keep knitting these socks for you and your husband, how many pairs of socks do you have?
I hand-knit socks are like sinking your feet into heaven, so you can never have enough.
Michelle, have you ever contacted, we were talking a little earlier, but have you ever contacted the Pittsburgh Penguins organization and maybe thought of getting a team building knitting session going after practices someday?
I have not, no.
Well, there's an idea.
Well, I'm wondering, Michelle, if maybe you knitting is not an indictment of the in-arena experience in Pittsburgh. Like, the intermissions are kind of dull. The TV timeouts are kind of dull. Like, I mean, if people are resorting to knitting during all the, like, isn't it like the kiss cam is on, all that stuff? Like, that doesn't interest you at all?
Well, you know, I'm an introvert, so being around the crowds is a tough thing for me. So while other people are engaged, I just kind of want to crawl in a hole. So the knitting in during the intermission, it was a way to take me away from the crowd and, you know, you could become less nervous and find my zen. But my husband noticed that when I started knitting during the games and actually the whole games, not just the intermissions or the commercial timeouts, that I didn't get as angry. So I didn't yell at the players when they didn't shoot on the power play. I didn't scream at the coach or the refs when they made what I considered a bad call. And it kind of saved his eardrums.
Okay. So, yeah. No, he's a smart man.
He appreciated that. So he's like, maybe you should knit at all the games. So that's when I started taking it all the time. And I find that knitting at the games makes me a better fan. And I'm not as angry. You know how some fans, they have this loss hangover?
Yeah.
You know, you lose a game and you just can't let go of that loss. It affects everything in your life. Well, okay, I do feel the loss. Man, I really wish we had, you know, played better or whatever. But knitting during the games makes it so I don't feel that loss quite so much. And I'm ready for the next game. Okay, let's put that behind us. Let's go.
Do you knit during, during games 3 and 4, were you knitting while the games were in Nashville?
You were in Nashville, were you not?
I was in Nashville for game 3.
Yeah.
I mean 4, not for game 3.
So you were there for game 4. So, because this is the thing, we're talking about the knitting, but you are a huge fan, and you made the journey to Nashville, and you were there for game 4. So yeah, did you knit while you were there, and what was that experience like?
Oh yeah, I knit while I was there. My people that were sitting next to us are like, hey, are you the knitting lady? And I'm like, yes, I am. And I kind of was snarky, and I said, what was your first clue, the knitting?
You need to keep knitting to keep the temper down. But I loved you. So you did, you know, our boy Kevin Weeks, great friend of mine, you know, he had a picture of you where you're at a Pens game and he's like, come on, you can't be knitting at an NHL Stanley Cup playoff game. And he was like, you know, he was obviously tongue-in-cheek because he put LOL at the end. But I loved your response. You said, I knit at the 2009 Cup Final Game 7 in Detroit. I knit where I want. I loved that response. You were there in 2009.
If you look at the Stanley Cup photo, in that big, huge sea of red, you'll see two blue jerseys right above the players on the right-hand side. No.
No, that's her.
My husband and I.
Nice. Well, I guess, you know what? You're the good luck charm. Are you going to be at the game tonight?
We are at the game tonight behind the bench.
We will keep our eye out for you.
And if I can interject one thing.
Yeah.
Most of the time, when you see the crowd, there's no puck in play. So
right.
95% of the photos that you see when I might be looking down, the puck isn't in play, so I'm looking at my knitting. But when that puck is in play, I'm watching the game. There was one time when Dan Bylsma was the coach, and we were sitting behind the Penguins bench, and a puck went out of play, and everyone in our section flinched. The players flinched. The coaches flinched. I was watching the puck. I reached my hand out, grabbed the puck, and then continued knitting.
What?
I am watching that game.
I love that. I need video of that. Michelle, thanks so much for taking the time. I look forward to seeing you behind the bench in the game tonight. I appreciate you taking the time here on Leafs Lunch.
Thank you very much for having me.
That is Michelle Miller, known as the Penguins knitting lady.
Don't mess with her.
Don't mess with her.
Michelle's got a spine. She's not going to take anything like...
You think?
Hey,
plus, she's got two sharp objects.
Are you the Penguins knitting lady? Well, I'm knitting and wearing a penguin sweater. What do you think?
Well, I told you, her Twitter avatar right there with her sticking her tongue out at Yager.
Sorry. I didn't mean to ask, though, and I apologize.
Oh, that is the... that goes back to... Remember the previous comment I made about if you think a fan is rowdy, crazy in the stands, yelling, chanting, that they're actually not paying attention? Well, no, you're wrong. So here she's knitting, and she snagged a puck out of the air.
And to be honest, I mean, if you look at a game, most people are on their phones all the time anyway.
Yeah.
At least she's doing something productive.
But she still didn't quite answer how many socks she and her husband have.
I will say that hand-knit socks, my grandmother used to knit socks for me. They are a little slice of heaven.
Really? You still got them?
No, because they come unraveled. When you wash them, they...
Oh.
Yeah, you got to hand wash them. And yeah.
My grandmother used to knit a lot of my clothes when I was younger. Like, the cool thing in the 80s were the leg warmers. She used to knit me my leg warmers. I had great sweaters and everything. Problem is she loved wool. And her skin don't like wool.
Brian Papineau, the Leafs trainer, is a great, he's a seamster. He's a great, with a sewing machine, he's unbelievable.
Back when
the teams used to, you know, repair sweaters instead of just tossing them out in every game, he's unbelievable. Brian can fix anything.
Now I know where to bring my shirts if I have a button loose.
Yeah, good luck with that, because he's a little busy.
Hey, Pappy, he'll sharpen your skates for you. Or may not have snuck my skates into him. I'm like, Pappy,
really?
Nobody's looking. Can you just sharpen my skates? He's good people that way.
So I'm going to venture to say, Greg, that if you and I brought our skates down to the Air Canada Center and asked Pappy to sharpen them, they would come back at about 500 miles an hour. But if you're Andy Petrillo, old reptilian.
I also got another one here. Grant Young sent in that an anagram for me. He just said, read between the letters. Red Sonja, which, by the way, she's my favorite character.
There's no T in Red Sonja.
You know what? Just go
with it. Old Reptilian has all the letters of your
name. What was yours again? Old Rash something? I don't know. What was yours?
Grim something.
The Grim Reaper. I think that's what yours was. All right, that's it for us. We got a big game tonight. Pittsburgh Penguins taking on the Nashville Predators. Keep your eye behind the bench because you will see the knitting lady there.
With her needles.
Be careful. Do not tick her off.
No.
Greg Gilbert, Gord Miller here, Andy Petrillo. You got the Scott MacArthur Show coming up next, but Scotty Mac had to fill in early this morning for Naylor and Landsberg. So it's Mr. Gareth Wheeler filling in. Don't go anywhere as you continue to listen to TSN 1050.